Hello, fellow law nerds. Welcome to a special confirmation hearing episode of Boom Lawyered, a Rewired.News podcast hosted by the legal journalism team that really misses spending days on end live tweeting confirmation hearings. We're having Kavanaugh flashbacks. I'm Imani Gandhi.
And I'm Jess Piclo. Rewire.news is dedicated to bringing you the best reproductive rights and social justice news, commentary, and analysis on the web, and the Team Legal podcast is part of that mission. So a big thanks to our subscribers and a welcome to our new listeners.
So today we had day one of the confirmation hearing of William, aka Bill Barr. And Jess, I mean, you live tweeted the morning session, so I'm just going to shoot it over right to you. What were your initial impressions after you finished watching the morning session?
So it's a huge contrast. The Barr hearings have been day one compared to the Kavanaugh hearings. We didn't have anyone getting all puffy faced and swearing and, and you know, spittle
Nobody
and
cried.
Maybe crying. Nobody cried. Not yet. We still have tomorrow. But so it was pretty mild compared to the Brad McBeer hearings. But that's not without some action. And I think that what's important in the Barr confirmation hearings to pay attention to is the action's going to be really snoozy. But it's still action. And we expected the hearings to start with some Russia talk, and it did. A lot of it focused on Russia. But he gave some really important signals as to where he stands on civil rights laws and how, as Attorney General, he would enforce those civil rights laws.
What sort of signals are you talking about? What made your spidey sense tingle?
So folks who are not real keen on federal civil rights laws like to go back to this idea of local control. And Bill Barr brought this up a lot. He talked about this idea that some areas of law enforcement should be decentralized. This is a huge flag for those of us with experience in federal civil rights laws because, you know, generally speaking, you don't want to leave the enforcement of federal civil rights up to local law enforcement. You know, we saw in the Rewire.News documentary Care and Chaos, for example, what that looks like for the abortion clinic in Charlotte, right? Local law enforcement is doing nothing and that clinic is besieged by protesters. That's the kind of civil rights world that Bill Barr envisions.
And that's not actually surprising, right? Because back in the 90s, he was the one who actually advocated for lifting the federal injunction when it came to enjoining protesters at the Wichita clinics, right? I mean, he was the one who said, we should lift this federal injunction and just let the states take care of it. And then what happened?
Right. So Bill Barr was Attorney General before the FACE Act was enacted. And at that time, clinic protests were bananas. I mean, we're starting to see it inch towards there.
So wait, Jess, I just want to interrupt you real quick so you can explain what the FACE Act, just in case our listeners don't know what it is.
Oh, thank you. No, that's great. No, the FACE Act is a piece of federal legislation that was enacted during the Clinton administration. Attorney General Reno was a big proponent of it. So snaps to her for that.
Snaps.
That is that protects the it's the federal Access to Clinic Entrances Act.
Yep.
I always have to like step through it.
Yeah, exactly.
It's a federal law that was passed in response to massive anti-abortion protests that were like the Summer of Mercy in Wichita, Kansas, for example, where protesters were coming in by the thousands and sieging clinics, busting in and handcuffing themselves to gurneys. Law enforcement would come in, arrest them. They'd get bonded out. They'd do it all over again. The federal government said, this is bananas. It's untenable. Someone's going to get hurt. They passed the federal FACE Act. Before that happened, Bill Barr was Attorney General and was basically kind of saying, yeah, like, go ahead, go bananas, folks, in terms of clinic protests. And he even signaled that we would see that in, should he be confirmed as Attorney General as well. In the morning sessions, Senator Blumenthal asked the only abortion question, or series of abortion questions. And, you know, Bill Barr is an experienced attorney. He knows his way not only around a courtroom, but around a confirmation hearing. And so he very deftly said that he believes Roe versus Wade is settled law. And then Blumenthal asked, well, you know, as Attorney General, would you defend it? And he said, you know, well, I would, you know, that's the job of the Solicitor General. So I would just defer to their judgment and how best to position the Department of Justice's response in a direct challenge to Roe.
Which is ridiculous, first of all. Like, oh, yeah, I mean, you know, if a huge abortion case comes up that might actually lead to the reversal of Roe, me, the dude who's been so anti-abortion that he said in 1992 or 91 that he believed that there was no constitutional underpinning for the decision and that mm-hmm. the right of privacy did not extend to abortion, we're supposed to believe that that guy is going to take a back seat to the Solicitor General and say, no, no, I'm just going to let the Solicitor General handle it. I call bullshit, Mr. Barr.
Yeah, he's not going to be hands-off on that. And so by not informing, for example, the members of the Judiciary Committee how he would participate in that, whether it's a supervisory role, if he'd want to have a little more hands-on, you know, Barr was really filibustering those answers. And so, you know, we know from a lot of experience that confirmation hearings don't produce a ton of substance. So really, gleaning answers is about connecting dots. And what we can do in the morning session is connect the dots that Bill Barr is outwardly hostile to federal civil rights. And we saw it in response to his abortion answer. And then also, you know, mentioning that he's totally cool going in and busting up sanctuary cities because, you know, they're terrible. And illegal immigration is a scourge on this country that is, you know, the result of fentanyl coming in. I mean, his immigration drug comments were just bananas, but he got into that a lot more in the second session too, I think, right?
In terms of the question about immigration, they talked about border security as if there was a literal crisis at the border right now. I mean, the way that they talked about the need for a barrier versus a wall and whether or not, you know, there were just heaps of drugs that were pouring in over the southern border, you know, Mexicans and with the rapists and the drugs. I mean, they talked about it as if it's a crisis. And Kamala Harris actually got him to admit or to acknowledge, or maybe it was Klobuchar, either Harris or Klobuchar got him to acknowledge that the drug issue is not a southern border issue. It's a port of entry issue, right? That something like 87% of the fentanyl in this country is entering through ports of entry, not through the southern border. Now, it must be said that a port of entry is a border. So when they say it's a border security issue, technically they're correct. They're sort of flubbing the definition of border. So a port of entry is a border. But what they're talking about when they say border security, they're talking about southern border security. They're not talking about the border with Canada. They're not talking about airports or, you know, boat ports. They're talking about the southern border. And there's just no evidence that there are drugs pouring in over the southern border. In order to get around that fact, he does say, well, there are no drugs that have been interdicted, meaning, okay, so yeah, we haven't caught any people with drugs, but that doesn't mean they're not getting through. And it's kind of like, so now we're talking about hypothetical drugs that are coming across the border, and that's why we've shut down the goddamn government?
I mean, basically. And, you know, I think it's important that you mention this national security thing, given Trump's threats to invoke some sort of national security threat or crisis to grab funding for a wall. It sounded like, at least in the morning session, that Bill Barr would support that. Now, I had to peel out and do a very important thing, which was go get my first haircut in 8 months.
And it looks amazing. Let's all give a clap to Jess and her new amazing hair.
I cut off a whole bunch of it, which was the entire of the Trump administration so far, I've said, and it feels amazing. But Imani jumped in and covered the second half of the hearing for me, so I actually missed a decent amount of it today. What did I miss?
Well, first of all, you missed a man who is trying to be confirmed as the Attorney General of the United States for the second time, mind you. You missed that man pretending that A, he didn't know what the Presidential Records Act is, and B, that he didn't know what emoluments are.
Maybe we should send him a copy of our podcast on the Presidential Records
exactly,
Act.
Exactly, because, listeners who have been sticking with us since the Kavanaugh confirmation hearings, we did an entire episode about the Presidential Records Act and what it is and what it means and what it does.
You all could be Attorney General.
Right, exact. Seriously. Whoever you are out there, listener, would probably be a better Attorney General than Bill Barr insofar as the PRA is concerned. I'm not going to get into what the PRA is or does, but I do want to point out that Senator Harris, Kamala Harris, was incredulous when Bill Barr said, the PRA, I don't know what it does. I have no idea what it does. I personally was incredulous when he said on multiple occasions that he hasn't really looked into the emoluments clause and doesn't really understand it or know what it does. Bitch, really?
That's, I mean.
I
mean, come emoluments? On.
What? I don't know.
Is that a person?
Never
who is
heard
she?
Of them.
Is she a bartender? Like, I don't know. She seems pretty cool. It's absurd
kinda
to think.
Rings a bell.
It's just absurd to think that Bill Barr doesn't know what the emoluments clause is or does, or has not familiarized himself with it, especially in light of the myriad lawsuits citing violations of the emolument clause that are currently being litigated. It was just not believable.
And it's extra nonsense given the fact that there's so little way that senators really have to push nominees in these hearings, and that the emoluments litigation is active and ongoing. He could have easily said something like, you know, well, that's not an issue that I've looked at a whole lot, but I understand it's an active litigation, so I'm happy to get back to you. Or I can't comment on that really specifically because it's an active litigation. And he knows this. So, right. Like, why?
So why go the route of, duh, I don't know. Like, no doy. Like, what are we, in sixth grade? This is ridiculous. The second thing that jumped out at me from the afternoon session was a discussion of LGBT rights, specifically under Title VII. Title VII of the Civil Rights Act of 1964 essentially says that employers cannot discriminate on the basis of sex, race, national origin, and some other factors. Glaringly, sexual orientation and gender identity have not been traditionally seen as being included in that because of sex prescription. However, under the Obama administration, Title VII was specifically interpreted to include sexual orientation and gender identity. And so now we have several cases that are being litigated across the country, and a couple that we're waiting for the Supreme Court to decide whether or not to take. Zarda versus Altitude Express is one involving sexual orientation. Harris Funeral Homes is one involving trans identity. And so we're waiting for the court to decide whether or not Title VII can be interpreted to include sexual orientation and gender identity. As Attorney General, it would be Bill Barr's job to decide whether or not he's going to back the Obama administration's position or the Trump administration's position up to now, which has been LGBT people can basically go fuck themselves. I mean, that's been the Trump administration's tactic, right? Am I right?
Oh, absolutely. I mean, you know, and it's the Obama administration made these efforts, and then this whole wave of federal court decisions came in that said, you know what? It makes no sense to read because of sex to not include sexual orientation because you're relying on your assumptions about how sex works in terms of how you're treating someone based on their sexual orientation, for example. And so this idea that there's this huge, massive conflict in the law is really this talking point that conservatives have drummed up. And it sounds like Bill Barr is really going along with it. I'm guessing he is not going to decide that Jeff Sessions was wrong,
right,
and that we should take a more nuanced approach to these cases.
Oh, you would be right. And what's interesting about what he said is that he said that he personally believes that LGBT people should be able to go to work and not be discriminated against. And at one point, it seemed to me that he also implied or suggested that discrimination in the workplace based on sexual orientation would be unconstitutional. So perhaps under the Equal Protection Clause, but he was not willing to say that Title VII covers it. So we have this interesting juxtaposition between what he says his personal views are, which is let LGBT mm-hmm. people go forth and work and be free from discrimination, versus his willingness to interpret a statute, Title VII, in such a way as to protect these people. And then secondarily, which I'm sure you are not surprised to hear, is that he said, well, you know, he believes that there shouldn't be discrimination on the basis of sexual orientation, but that there should be accommodations for religion. And so that's where we get into what I like to call the masterpiece cake shopping of America, which is where, you know, yeah. It's fine to be gay if you want to be gay, but if you're going to go and bake, if you're going to go into a bake shop and ask for a cake to be baked, then that person can say, well, it's my First Amendment right not to do so because my cakes are freedom of expression. And also, it's against my religious belief. I'm an evangelical Christian. You're gay. I win. You don't have rights because religion, hooray, hooray, Jesus. I mean, that's essentially where we are with the weaponization of the First Amendment, and it's driving me bananas.
And I just want to spend a moment on this point because I think it's so important. Bill Barr's really trying to have it both ways here in his testimony. The idea that he says he's personally, it's his personal opinion that if you are an LGBTQ employee, you should be free from workplace discrimination. Yes, that's fantastic. Everybody give the man a cookie for that. It doesn't change the fact that there are still 26 states where you can get fired just simply for being gay. And as the top law enforcement officer in the country, he would be in the unique position to help finally stir that ship or steer that ship into the port of Title VII protects these employees. End of the story.
Right.
So that's one thing that's just like, it, that grates me. But then let's talk about this, like, we need to accommodate religious objections to LGBTQ people. Because, I mean, besides the fact that it's offensive to have a religious objection to a person, let's just, like, say that. Bill Barr doesn't admit and concede that there is no limiting principle to what he is putting forth in terms of this accommodation. So that's a legal phrase. What do I mean by no limiting principle? If you say, for example, look, I have a religious objection to baking a cake for a same-sex couple because I don't believe in same-sex marriage. If you accept that there is a way for you to avoid civil rights laws there, it is very difficult to say, well, then how do you not avoid civil rights laws in, say, fair housing?
Right.
If you are a landlord, then how do you not object to renting to a gay couple? And in fact, we're seeing this as Christian charities are trying to turn away trans kids from shelters, for example, or refuse foster care and adoption placements with LGBTQ families. So Bill Barr is playing the cameras when he says these things. And I think that's just really important to say.
And it's also shady. You know, I mean, what you said is absolutely spot on. He is in a unique position to make sure that LGBTQ people can go to work and be free from discrimination, to make sure that under Title IX, trans students can go to a public school and use whatever friggin' bathroom they want to use. He's, you know, he wants you to know that he supports you personally, but when it comes to extending you legal protections, to actually protecting you from people who would deny you your rights, he's a little bit, but religion, but the Bible, and that's just not acceptable.
Yeah, it sounds like he's offering you thoughts and prayers when it comes to protecting your civil rights.
Exactly. It's the thoughts and prayers of the law, and just as in gun control, thoughts and prayers ain't cutting it.
No, it's not. So, I mean, I started saying that it was a snoozer of a day, but it's actually not. I mean, we covered a whole bunch of stuff that happened in, you know, what is a kind of limiting space in these judiciary hearings, huh?
It's just that no one started crying, and there was at no point did anyone start yelling about how much they like beer. And so that sort of makes these proceedings seem a little bit more tame than the ones that we covered back in September.
Wow, amazing the standard we've set. So closing out from day one, are there things that you're looking for in day two?
I'll be looking for senators to press him more on sexual orientation, more on gender identity, more on this willingness apparently to balance the civil rights of a marginalized group of people against the rights, quote unquote, rights of the religious right to be bigots. Mm-hmm. I want him to actually explicitly say that he does not support the rights at a federal legal protection level of LGBT people to be free from discrimination. How about you, Jess?
Yeah, I mean, I'm going to be looking for that. And I think, you know, I really want, I'm hopeful that the senators really draw Barr out more on these draconian immigration and criminal justice views that we heard. He's a huge proponent of locking everybody up, especially if you're brown and nonviolent. And it just really dovetails with what the administration is doing in terms of immigration enforcement and Barr's own stated views so far on a really harsh immigration policy. So I thought Senator Booker and Senator Harris did a good job starting that conversation. Senator Durbin did also. And I'm really, in addition to the civil rights stuff that you mentioned there, looking forward to see them really pushing him, because the reality is he was attorney general in the early 90s with all of this, with all of these terrible policies. And we have the receipts. We actually have the data that shows his ideas are trash.
Yeah, trash. Don't work. Mass incarceration, huge failure.
Yeah.
So that's going to wrap it up for us today. If you'd like to continue this conversation, you can follow me at Angry Black Lady on Twitter. You can follow Jess at Hegemommy on Twitter, H-E-G-E-M-O-M-M-Y. And please be sure to tune in to Jess's Twitter feed tomorrow, where she will be back at the helm live tweeting these proceedings.
Ooh, jazz hands.
Jazz hands. All right, that's
thanks,
it for
y'all.
Us.
See you on the tubes.
See you on the tubes.
Boom Lawyered is created and hosted by Jessica Mason Piclo and Imani Gandhi. This episode was produced by Mark Folletti, who is also our executive producer. And the Rewire.news editor-in-chief is Jody Jacobson.